Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host tonight, Dr. Kate, and hopefully my regular co-host, Red Beckman, will be possibly joining us sometime tonight. He is back home, and I talked with him earlier today. Seems to be doing pretty well, and so glad to report that he will be around, and hopefully he'll be listening and joining in the conversation a little bit later.
Good evening,
Kate,
Terry.
Are you there with me?
Yes, I just thought I'd say good evening, and glad to be co-hosting this evening with you.
Well, we're glad to have you here with this type of lecture situation like I think we're going to have tonight. We need some intellectuals here, and of course, you know, you're our resident intellectual.
Good one. Okay, thank you. I'll put myself back on mute then.
No, don't do that. Hang in here with me. Before I don't know if Mama Cooks has got our guest tonight online or not. Let's see what she's saying. Yes. Okay. Let's go ahead and introduce Steve Pattison tonight, and then we'll open as we always do with a prayer. And I believe we really may need the hand of the Holy Spirit to help us understand everything that Steve's going to present tonight. Steve, are you there with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Well, Steve, I do hear you loud and clear. Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. It's been a while since you were here with us, and we're really looking forward to your presentation tonight. We do
Thank
like
you,
to
sir.
Open with a prayer, and if you don't mind, I'm going to open with a prayer, and then after that, I'd like for you to start out by giving us just a little bit of background on yourself so that our listeners will have an idea of who they're listening to. Let's pray. Almighty Father God, we just we invite your spirit to be here with us and during the show tonight. We are so thankful for the many ways that you've blessed us here at the Walls in Our Minds. Especially thankful that you brought our Red back home safely, and that he's feeling well, and I just pray for your healing hand on him. But also, I pray, Father, that you're with Steve tonight during his presentation, that you bring through the message that you would have him present, because we know that this is a spiritual battle, and without you in the front of everything that we do, that there's just no way we can have a real victory. So we're thankful for your son, and we are just blessed and gracious that you allow us to come to you and have an audience with you. It's in the name of Jesus we pray. Amen. Well, Steve, Amen. give us some history on what you've been up to and a little bit about yourself so that our listeners can have some understanding.
Okay, I'm a 62-year-old young man. Have a family, married for 44 years. I have a son that's living with us. He's a very talented young man that does most of our research for us with a couple other young men. And I'm kind of the person that's the communicator amongst the researchers. As you know, most researchers are not talented in communication because they have their nose in the books all the time, so to speak. And I grew up on a farm back in the 60s and moved down here to Overland Park, Kansas as a financial planner and Series 7 licensed stockbroker back in 1984, and been a Series 7 licensed stockbroker financial planner since the 1973. And I've learned a lot of things out there in business, and everything keeps pointing to the government passing new laws every few years, causing, you know, all my clients to do different things all the time, and that was always a little upsetting. And then eventually I learned that the stock market was manipulated by someone and didn't know who it was. And back in the late 80s, I was able to take a lot of time, do research, and found these three young men that did most of the research for us, and found this one important book, which is Stephens, which led us to where we are today. And is there anything else you'd like to know?
Oh, that's a pretty good start. That is a very good start. I know that you've been a regular guest on a competing show on Thursday nights. Speaking of competing shows, everybody needs to set their DVRs if you want to watch So You Think You Can Dance. We're courageous to go right up head-to-head to them. So people who want to get an education and not be stuck with a remote control in their hands when everything crashes, hopefully will be here with us tonight. But on that other show, I know you've been a regular guest for many weeks, and I don't know if you've had the opportunity to do the kind of presentation we're going to afford you here, because what I really want to grasp a clear understanding of not just how you define the problem, but also to really understand what you're suggesting are the solutions. And I believe to do that, I need to be kind of quiet and let you really take the reins here. And so I don't want to interfere with your presentation. I want to really turn you loose on that. I know you'd like for me to perhaps kind of keep things on track, but beyond that, I really want to stay in the background and really let you make yourself at home and act like this is your show and your listeners, because that's really what they are tonight.
Okay. Anybody out there that's listening that I start covering something that you have a question on, feel free to call and interrupt, because this is going to be off the top of my head. I'm going to just start talking just I would if you'd called me or whatever. And basically, back in the early 90s, we learned that the Federal Reserve was not part of the federal government, and I just wanted to understand where the income taxes codes came from, and I started out quizzing and writing letters to my federal representative, which her name was Jan Myers back in the early 90s, and she would not correspond with me. She wouldn't tell me where the law was, none of those things. And after I read the code book from cover to cover that related to anything that had to do with taxes for me and other individuals out here in the Union States, I determined that I wasn't required to file because I wasn't the person as defined in the codes. And we tried to figure out, well, why doesn't everybody else know this? Why doesn't our accountants know this? And what happened? So we started doing research back, and that's when we ended up finding this book called Stephens Pleadings, which is free download if anybody wants to email me, and I can send that information to you, or you can find it on the Internet or find it on my web pages, which the easiest way just to do a search on Google for Pattison, Pattison, articles, and you should be able to find it under a Citizens for a Republican Form of Government website. And I have most all my documents there, and if you started with one of them, which I reviewed here just the other day, was the media and how unbelievable that we've had people working in our government, working in our country, that were, you could call them money people or bankers or whatever, but they manipulated, controlled just about every industry. And actually, I finally discovered a saying by one of the Rothschilds about the system, and that was before I had found out that John F. Kennedy had used that term, the system, and also he referred to a monstrous conspiracy in his 1961 speech, which you'll find out on my You Be the Judge and Jury, which is the very first one on my webpage. And it's very interesting to go back through to learn that we lost our standing back in the 1860s, when they came out and actually created the war and made brothers and families fight each one another. And that's been their system since we found out who these people were and traced them all the way back to Babylon. And they came from a country called Khazarian, and they were known as Khazars. And I would have to believe today that a majority of the people are descendants of that country, because they more or less controlled everything back in those days. And the reason we haven't been able to do anything today, and we've kind of stopped everything, because I want to unite and assemble as many people as we can to be able to understand that there's no use in going out and filing or signing a petition or writing a letter to the current government de facto, because we lost our standing back in the 1860s when they actually wrote new constitutions and put in place a government over top of the lawful state governments. And once that happened, because the state governments were actually the principal owners of the federal government at that time and allowed them to do certain things, which is all explained and demonstrated by the federal constitution, I was just appalled. And so when we finally eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. So we've been the truth seekers, so to speak. And there's all kinds of people out there today that are attempting to fight them one way or another. And just like if the income tax IRS department closed their books yesterday and stopped working, it wouldn't change anything in the system, not one thing whatsoever. And one of the things that one of the prominent people that wrote a book about the 10 steps necessary for a government de facto is to destroy or suspend the rule of law. Well, they didn't do that here in our country. What they did is they replaced the law that the founding fathers had adopted and replaced it with Roman civil codes, which is explained in Stephen's book. So Stephen's book is kind of our Bible, so to speak, of what happened, how it happened, and how they're doing it to us. Because if you don't use common law to protect your rights or to sue people, then you use their laws, which makes you a subject, which you don't have standing in their courts, in their government, because it's a government de facto or whatever. And we can prove and document that all these things have happened, and a lot of these people out here in the world today are already living under one world government or one world order, and we've been doing it since birth. It's called the system. And basically everybody that keeps telling us that we got a one world order coming, you know, that's a falsehood. That's just another thing to keep us busy. And I guess the one thing that, you know, the words and terms that we use today have all been changed, or not all of them, but the ones that are important. Like, I don't think the term revolution should be used, because we're not revolting against any lawful government. We want to restore the lawful government so that we can have our standing and our control again over top of our appointed and elected officials. And to explain the standing, you have to identify in any type of paperwork that you're doing a petition who you are, you have to have a date on it. And take, for example, the Declaration of Independence. The actions and places is in Congress on July 4th, 1776. The action was and from that venue. Anonymous Declaration of the 13th United States of America is who did it, the body of the document. And, of course, at the end, the people that was appointed and represented the people signed the document. And that's the same thing with all the preambles to the Constitution, the national or otherwise. And it says, we the people of the United States, which means the 13th United States of America, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our prosperity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So that, in a nutshell, tells you who, what, when, and where. And, of course, there was a signing date at the end of that where everyone signed it. And there's a lot of people out there that have done a lot of research into the Constitution, said that there's this problem, that problem, until the general people are back in power and can correct any of those so-called problems, we have to agree on to use something. And that Constitution is valid today because it was signed in 1789, I believe, and it stands as the law of the land. And the one page that you can go to on my website is called A Timeline Focusing on Taxes, Money, and War, provides for the early history of our country. And, of course, I'd have to write volumes and volumes and volumes to cover everything. But it's just amazing to understand that back before 1774, our colonies were doing so great that Benjamin Franklin would actually brag about how great they were doing. And they were printing their own money at that time. They weren't allowing somebody else to print it and then charge them interest or give them interest for the money that they supposedly loaned us. And, of course, today they're actually printing money out of thin air, and most people that are probably listening today probably understand that. So I guess at this point I'd like to go to the constitutions that are in the state of Missouri, which are talked about in my websites, and the standing that we need to get back to, which is clearly explained in the Declaration of Independence, and how we lost it was during the Reconstruction Acts and the emplacements. And these state constitutions were, all of them had Declaration of Rights of the Inhabitants, which is a list of all of our rights that they were going to protect. And the One World Order is in domination today, so we have to do something, and the only way we can do that is to unite and to assemble, more or less, to be able to start sharing this information. And I've spent hours and hours and hours of putting this information on my webpage. And the one webpage that I have that talks about the which dictionary you should use has the definitions of government de facto. Now, on the sixth edition, page 697, it has two large paragraphs defining it. And one of the key ones in the last one that's actually found in a court case says that we are supposed to respect the government that is not the lawful government by the government de jure when it's restored. So that court case tells me that we can restore that lawful government because it's still there, and I'm going to explain that in a minute. But the government... government facto is a government of fact, meaning it's the current government in power. They have the standing, and there's no people involved in that government other than the principals, because they're operating as a municipal corporation. And it's a government actually exercising power and control as opposed to the true and lawful government, a government not established according to the Constitution of the nation or not lawfully entitled to recognition or supremacy, but which is nevertheless displaced the government de jure. Now, this is in Black's Law Dictionary, and that's the law book that the current attorneys are using today. Now, if you go down to the seventh edition, they don't even have government de facto defined, but they do have de facto government defined underneath that, and it's four lines. And in the second one, it says, an independent government established and exercised by a group of countries' inhabitants who have separated themselves from the parent state. Well, we don't read anything about in the history book about that, but the proof is in the pudding. If you go to the preamble for the state of Missouri on my web pages, it states, "We the people of Missouri, inhabiting the limits within designated and hereafter designated by our representatives at convention assembled at St. Louis on Monday, the 12th day of June, 1820, do mutually agree to form and establish a free and independent republic by the name of State of Missouri, and for the government thereof do ordain and establish the Constitution." That has all the points, including the date and signatures at the end of it, that created that Constitution. Now, what happened in 1865, which was during the Civil War, and Missouri, like most states, were all under martial law, they wrote a new Constitution, and it says this: the preamble identifies who and where they inhabited, and that they had representatives and conventions established at St. Louis, not in St. Louis. And the new one for 1865 says, "We the people of the state of Missouri, grateful to Almighty God, the sovereign ruler of the nations, for our state government, our liberties, and our connections with the American Union, and acknowledges our dependence upon him for the continuance of those blessings to us and our prosperity, do for the more certain security thereof, and for the better government of the state, ordain and establish this revised and amended Constitution." It does not identify the people as being the inhabitants, like the first one does. It says the people of the state of Missouri, which more or less makes them subjects of that state. And, of course, the people that actually put this in were the people that were from the military that was here occupying Missouri. Now, we did the Missouri research because it's a pre-1861 state. We call all the states that came in after 1861 as gunpoint states, meaning that they were not giving a republic because we no longer had a republic after the Civil War. And, of course, remember, in the 7th edition of Blacks, it says a group of a country's inhabitants who have separated themselves from the parent state, which means that they established and ordained that 1865 Constitution. And that's where some people call it parallel government, because the original government is still in effect today. The paperwork's all there. All we need to have is people come out and assemble and talk about what's happened. Prove it to everyone they know so that they can have a verifiable election for the lawful state government and put the governor in and all the other needful representatives and appointed officials to run that lawful government. At a point where we are established, then we can make a constructive notice to the de facto government, noticing them that they're no longer needed, and also notify the Army, Navy, and whoever else is within that state, and what their duties are to protect the people, not the citizens of the United States, which are inhabiting the state of Missouri. That's one thing that people have to know, and that they need to email me, because that I can get through that tonight about how they changed everyone's character and status, and we still have that same subject character and status today. Now, how did they fool those people back in the 1860s to vote for this new Constitution and the new government that was placed? They required everyone, before they could vote, in fact, you know, some of those people at that point were actually picked up and put in jail if they would not take the loyalty oath for Missouri, which mainly says that they say that they are citizens of the United States and that they have not done anything to participate in any war against the United States government. So they were making enemies of everyone and making them sign this loyalty oath, or they couldn't vote, or most likely would go to jail if they didn't. And that correlated with the 14th Amendment and the Reconstruction Amendments, which can all be looked up and at some point on the Internet. I know it'll take a long time to understand this. And one of the things that you can actually pinpoint that the Civil War was actually created and by this money people is that if you go in to read and attempt to find the full speech of Abraham Lincoln It's called The House Divided Speech, and he refers to four men, Stephen, Franklin, Roger, and James. At that time in history, everyone knew who these men were and who would, Abraham Lincoln was referring to. The truth is these four people, under the direction of the people that created the system, put into play actions that would be blamed on the Civil War, and the main reason was never printed in the history books. Now, these four people were the past president, the current president, a United States Supreme Court judge, and a representative from the state of Illinois. I don't know how he got his power, but yeah, it's all pretty fantastic that Abraham Lincoln sits there and spells it out for you, kind of in a story-like way, because I don't think he wanted to come out and actually accuse these people of sedition or treason at that point. And, of course, the other things you can look at that happened after the Civil War by placing these new states within a state, in other words, the Second Constitution actually created a new state in within the lawful state, which is unconstitutional. If you read Article 3 of Section 4 of the United States Constitution, it says new states may be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state. So that was an unlawful act. And if you go the 13th and 14th Amendment, and my third or fourth one talks about that, and I have a state supreme judge from, I believe, Utah, that has a 200-page document that explains that there's no way the 13th and 14th Amendments were passed lawfully during the Civil War. And, of course, the citizens of each state, there was no need for the 13th and the 14th Amendment, because in Section 2 of Article 4, it says the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens of the several states. So at some point, if someone was freed as a slave, he could have sued anyone at that point. And, of course, if we had law at that point and not war, I think that would have happened. The war was created so that there would be more war forever, where they divided and conquered us, which kind of comes from the book Art of War, which I'll talk about here in a few minutes. I have to take a break here for a second and take a drink.
Well, Stephen, while you're taking a quick drink, one of the questions that I had was related to standing. And I know that our founding fathers had standing. The colonies, after the Revolutionary War, the states had standing. And it seems that this era, this time, the Reconstruction time, the Civil War time, was really where we seem to have lost that, or at least begin to lose that standing. I think they've been whittling away at it. But I guess my question is, where did standing come from, for starters? Because it's my understanding that's really a legal fiction, that it's not even a constitutional term. But obviously, the concept of standing is there, and I'm wondering about that transition, how you saw that people had standing before this, and then all of a sudden they seemed that if they didn't completely lose their standing, it certainly started to diminish at that point.
Well, if you read the 14th Amendment, the citizens that they refer to in there, and say they're citizens of the United States, and also the state they're within. All the states after that point became territorial states underneath the dictatorial federal government, and we were all subjects to them, and therefore no longer were we the masters in this scheme or system that they created. So basically the reason that we have standing today is if you use the lawful state government or constitution, that's pre-1861, and you refer to yourself properly by identifying the date, who you are, and that you were born on the land and all those things, because the person today is a legal fiction, and that legal fiction doesn't have standing because they've, I guess, written it all in capital letters that we don't really care about, because we just tell them who we are. And I think, Terry, you've read that constructive notice that we did back in 1970 or 97, where we actually served that on the United States District Judge here in Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, and within less than 10 days, he had the case dismissed, because that was the only thing we did in the whole case. And it was dismissed with prejudice, which meant it could never be heard again, and it was a IRS tax case. And we did that several times afterwards, because if you identify who you are and that you refer to the lawful state government, because it's still there, even the ones that were after 1861, even at gunpoint, because no one wants to come out and tell you, if you know how to use this common law, that you are not eligible and that you don't have standing. They're going to run from you because they don't want to make this known to everyone. So that's what we've learned by following those paperworks, and we've done it in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We've done it out in California and by a couple of these people that we've taught how to do this. And basically, you have standing if you're one of the people within inhabiting within the borders of the lawful state that was created by the first constitution that was put in place. And yes, there's a few problems with the ones that were brought in after 1860s, but if you identify yourself properly, just like the founding fathers did in the Declaration of Independence, which is what we've found in most of the paperwork that's been done by all these other organizations, they do not do that. This is the legal way of being able to identify yourself, to have standing in a court that you actually control, because if it's a fiction, you can go in and just tear it apart if you want to, if you want to take the time and effort, and if you have the knowledge to do it in the proper paperwork. But we decided that we didn't want to do that because there was no need of allowing that judge to walk off and say, I don't want to hear the case and dismiss it or whatever, because that never gets us anywhere. And that's what happened in all the cases that we did. They dismissed the case, or they dropped the case, or they did whatever. In one case, we didn't even get to court. The IRS returned the property that was stolen from the person here in Overland Park, Kansas, because they don't want us in their courts with the knowledge that we have, because we are the people. We are the ones that are still the masters of these sovereign states. And that's what makes us have standing, because we have the authority. We're the ones that are delegating the authority to the state or the appointed and elected officials in the lawful state. Now, the reason we don't have standing in the de facto states is because we are not part of their organization. We're not the people that they're talking about. They were other people, and that's why I also believe that every so many years they put a new constitution in, because in Missouri they have four or five constitutions, and every so many years they put a new one in, and we theorize that the ones that put in the first constitution were then dead, so they had to put somebody else in charge, so they just created another constitution and never made it public, because it's a fiction anyway. You know, it's a government de facto. And the reason they get away with it is they control the system and the money. And that's so we still got the power, and also that lawful state is the only one that has the power over top of the federal government. And we can actually take back the federal government if we have enough of these union states to declare their sovereignty with the use of the people, not the citizens of the United States. That phrase has been defined in the United States codes to mean a person, and that person is an individual, and that person is a citizen of the corporate United States, which is the legal fiction that was created at some point. And Dan Metter explained that very good in some of his writings. Now, I know they're long and detailed, but it's there, and the codes are there, and it's all under civil law, meaning, well, it should be civil codes. So many people use the term civil law, I even do it sometimes. because today civil law is actually Roman civil codes. And the civil law, back when they used that term before 1860s and before that date sometime, civil law was actually common law. In other words, it was a law for this civilization. And the common law is really simple. If you don't damage myself, my wife, my children, my property, or come on my property, because I have standing on my property. I own it. I make the laws on my property. But when I go to somebody else's house, I have to obey his laws, or collectively the people have gotten together and wrote a state constitution, and we got to obey those laws and any other the other constitutional laws that are created afterwards. So does that answer your question for standing?
Well, sort of. I mean, what you just said raised more questions than it answered, because I've got a lot of questions. How familiar? And I don't want to. I don't really want to get you off track here. But how much do you know about the trust plan or the Restore America plan? I mean, you're familiar with those guys?
Well, I do, but their paperwork's flawed because they didn't identify themselves like the Declaration of Independence does, and like the first Constitution of Missouri, we assume most of the other constitutions are done the same way. In other words, their paperwork, they need to identify who they are and what venue they're in. In other words, where do they come from, and where do they get the power to do what they said they were going to do? That's where
that's a bigger question for me. Where do they get the power they say they're going to do? Because none of what they said they're going to do has panned out or happened.
Well,
so
that's because they're being ignored. I don't think that if we had 12 good men and women in each state, knowing what we know, and if they learned just half of what we know, and we helped them devise a constructive notice. And we'd like to do it with pre-1861 states because we know those are easy. The other ones are going to be a little bit harder and take a little bit more. And that if we get all the pre-1861 states to come back aboard and restore those lawful states, and the people that are inhabiting within those borders come out telling, well, I'm one of the people within the borders, and I inhabit within this county, and therefore I am one of those people. We can restore that state government, and that's where you get standing, because all the laws in the Constitution talks about you and your rights. Other than that, it's kind of like if right now, if you and I flew to China, we wouldn't have standing there because we didn't inhabit and live there at that time. In other words, that's what's happening here.
We've got some questions in the chat room. Or at least some statements in the chat room that I'd like for you to perhaps address. One says the judge told us back in the 1980s, when other patriots declared their constitutional right before the court, that he had jurisdiction if they had insurance on their homes, car insurance, and a driver's license.
Well, those are all part of the system that makes up the government de facto. If you participate in any of those things, that is evidence that you are a citizen of the United States and they do have jurisdiction over you. And, of course,
he also says that we are owned by the corporation of the United States of America housed in D.C. I assume he's talking about the 10 square miles.
That is true, again, if you call yourself a citizen of the United States or do not. Yeah, we start out with all our court cases of declaring that we have all of our rights guaranteed to us and that we're protected by common law. And that's the truth. That's the way the founding fathers did it. That's what they adopted, common law. How civil codes came in is another thing that takes hours and hours to do that is explained in the preface of Stephens, which is they didn't have the authority to put in the codes. And those codes have now become the law in the government de facto. In that law or that government de facto, if everybody's walking around having a driver's license or Social Security number or write your name all in caps, they can all say that you are a citizen of the United States, and most people will not deny that. But we filed what we call a self-serving declaration and filed it at the county recorder's office and also filed it in the legal newspaper for 3 days. And no one ever came back and said we were wrong, because they can't. You know, it's our declaration. And until they come out and prove that we're not free people and that we're not citizens of the United States as that term is defined in the United States codes today, because even those codes have been converted. They are not the laws and are not constitutional. It's kind of like the Federal Reserve. You know, I don't know.
Okay, now.
Just one point. I was talking to a guy today that said he was a history major in college. I asked him, well, did you know the Federal Reserve is not part of the federal government? They don't teach that. That's why we're in problems today, the lack of knowledge. So go ahead, Terry.
Well, we spent an inordinate amount of time here at Walls in Our Minds talking about how we've been lied to in the schools and from the media and from the church, even from the pulpit. There's a lot of things that we haven't been taught. As a matter of fact, we've been taught a lot of things that we found out are lies. One of the questions in the chat room is, at this point, do we really have any standing before the court or government for that fact? What you just said, though, indicates that when you've given certain disclosures, that if nothing else, whether they've given you standing or not, I don't guess is the correct term at that point, but at least they have resisted trying to claim jurisdiction, which I guess in some form might be a form of standing. And I'm just wondering about that question. Do we really have any standing at this point?
Yeah, if you have the knowledge how to use it. Because there's another case that we helped here just lately, and we don't know how it's going to come out. But basically, if you know that you are free, and a free man is what they were called back in the colonial days, and that you were inhabiting within the lawful state, you have all the rights in the world to use common law to defend your natural-born rights, your unalienable rights. And if you go into their court, you always say certain things like, I'm here on visitation rights or something like that. And there's a Randy Lee out in California did that, and his court case is on the Internet. You can find it, where he basically just tells the judge that he's not the person in the indictment because he doesn't spell his name all in capitals. And, of course, they've kind of defeated that because they sometimes put your names in proper English. But what I'm saying is that court is de facto. You need to know how to go in and present yourself that you are one of the people inhabiting and that you're not a person as defined in the state codes and in the federal government. That's how you defeat them. They run from you. But that doesn't solve our overall problem of what they're doing to us, because they created the system and control our federal government, putting our kids at war, and that's what I want to stop. I want to stop all these wars that are going on, because they use that and the money to control us. We need to start educating our neighbors, our friends, our family, so that everyone will wake up one day and say, aha, that's how they do it. And then we can all restore the state governments that are still there, and there's no new paperwork you have to do. All you got to do is declare that you're one of the people within the borders of that state, the lawful state, not the de facto state that's there now. So in other words, it's like having two corporations in the strip mall. The first corporation was based in the first door, and the second corporation is in the second door. All of a sudden, they locked the first door up, and everybody was forced into going into the second door. Well, we have to open up that first corporation or the first government and start using it again, because that's where our standing is hidden. That's where we can go out and make the de facto government go away and elect lawful state representatives so that we can get our state to join with the other lawful state governments and restore the national government so that it's government protecting the people rather than what they've been doing for the last 200 years almost. So that's where our power comes from.
Well, you know, you've heard Red talk about the Seventh Amendment and how he has attacked the judges by declaring them to not be able to be impartial because they're a government agent, and basically threatening them with certain titles and statutes that basically forces them to back off. And you sound like you're doing sort of the same thing, but just coming at it from a different angle. And I'm trying to figure out how those two may be the same or different.
Well, we do proper paperwork where it identifies who we are, where our standing comes from, and that there's only two people, types of people in our world, in our government. One is the people that elected the representatives or our servants, and the person that's serving as our servants. And the person that's serving as our servants has to take an oath of office. And either he is one or both of those at the same time, and if he denies that he is one of those people with an oath of office, then he's a trouble. And so he can't admit that either. He can't admit that he's working for a government de facto. He doesn't want that to be put on paper. That's why they don't come back at us. But that doesn't solve our problem, because we got to replace this system, the system of this printing money out of thin air, because if you and I was able to print all the money and fool all the money in the world and continue to print the money, we'd control the world, and that's what they've done to us. So, you know, winning in court is something that we don't even care about anymore, because it's not worth our time and effort to help people for doing that. And we're telling people, don't do anything to get arrested. You know, until we get back our state governments, the lawful state governments, there's no other way of living, because we're either in their government, and if we allow it to continue, it's like living in China. It's a government de facto.
Well, how many of these cases have you guys gotten dismissed?
Well, each one's different. The very first one, the guy was in court for almost 2 years, and that's the Glenn Hughes case. I'd be more than happy to send anyone that emails me a copy of that plus my notes of what happened, because it was dismissed within less than 10 days after we got involved with the case. The second person had his RV stolen from him by the IRS, and that never got to court, but the IRS agent called the guy up after we served constructive notices on him saying, do you want your RV back? And he says, yeah, I do. And he said, well, if you don't bring those two yahoos with you, because, see, you got to work with two witnesses. In other words, common law is you, the person being damaged, and two witnesses that would stand up and tell the world that they witnessed what happened, and the truth would set you free. And in that case, they gave back the RV, but they made him pay for storage or towing or something, but he got his RV back. And he didn't want to sue, because we wanted to sue the IRS agent and make an example of it, but he didn't want to do it because he had some family problems. And so he just didn't want to waste his time and effort. So what I'm trying to tell people that are doing things like that stop wasting your time. I mean, every time someone goes out and votes for this government de facto, it's giving them your standing. Your standing comes from you as being a natural born man on the land with the use of common law. And if that information is put in a proper constructive notice or whatever, and we can restore the state governments, we get back our power that emanates through the state governments, because that's where the power comes from. See, the only reason that you have power is to protect yourself as one man or you and your wife. But to have power to do what you want to do, you've got to have a state government that's yours, collectively with the rest of the people. Without that, you don't have any standing in the federal government.
This seems to be a consistent message. I've been preaching it here on Walls in Our Minds, and Red's agreed with me that our solutions really have to come through our state sovereignty and being a sovereign citizen of the state. You look at Martin Babbitt's work in The Illusions of Freedom, and you know, he basically says the same thing. The power really really lies with the state. If you want to shut the Fed down, it's not going to happen as being a citizen of the United States or an American citizen. It's going to happen by a collective of citizens of the states through their state sovereignty.
Right, but the problem there is you can't do it with the de facto state governments that are there now. You got to start operating under the original lawful state constitution and replace that de facto government in that state before you can go the next step. It's kind of like getting to first base and second base. First base, you got to get there and take back your lawful state governments. Now, taking them back means paperwork. And one person with two witnesses. The more the merrier. And that's the only
we've got about we've got about 9 minutes before we'll take a little break. So I just want to let you know we do have a break coming up in about 9 minutes, where you'll be able to get off of the phone for three or four minutes or whatever. And
do we have another hour after that?
We do. We have another hour after that. Then there's a lot to get into, and I'm hoping we'll get some people calling in and asking some questions and responding to that. We've got I don't know if you're probably not in chat, are you? You're not looking at the chat room, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I've been trying to give you some of the feedback on that. In some of what you talked about before we move on to your unite and assemble concept, because that's really, that concept's not new.
It isn't.
And we've had county assemblies that have been out there meeting, but they seem to have gotten sucked into all these other top down organization kind of things and these seminar profiteers, and they seem to have gotten into that. They've also been quibbling a lot. There seems to be a lot of disunity amongst some of those people that have been assembling. But I want to get into that after the break. But before we get into the break, you talked about the 10 elements that are necessary, the 10 steps that are necessary for a fascistic group or government to destroy the democratic character of a nation state and subvert the social political liberty. Do you want to talk about that a little bit before we go to break?
Well, sure. You know, those are all some of the planks of the UN. And this guy supposedly wrote in a book to invoke a terrifying internal and external enemy. In other words, that's why we've been fighting wars. You know, they've created an enemy, like the Civil War. They created an enemy, a reason for us to divide and be conquered by allowing us to fight each other. The same thing with husbands and wives after World War II, where they put the women to work. And they wanted to continue to work, which I think they should be able to. But they still made a rift in there so that they divided and conquered the thoughts of these people so that they actually fought amongst themselves. And then the next one is to create a secret prison where torture takes place. And I think any prison you go to, there's torture that goes on because of the things that the other inmates do to you, you know? And I don't even want to talk about that, and develop a thug caste or parliamentary force not answerable to the citizens. The current people that are in there don't answer to you. I've written questions to my representative years ago, and I got a form letter back that had nothing to do with my question. And then I went up against one of my senators here, and when they came out, and I think I actually changed their system of coming out and talking to the people, because he stood up in front of everybody and took questions from the audience. And that was back when Enron was going on, and I asked him, well, what are you going to do with when the next large corporation falls just like Enron did? And he said, well, Enron is just an isolated. And I said, no, there's 8 more companies, including IBM, on that list. And it kind of shocked him that I knew that. And, of course, IBM got out from underneath it because they sold their small compact to China. A huge part of their corporation, so they were able to get money to come in. And, you know, if they'd been a bank, they should have just waited for the government to give them money, you know, right? Anyway, it goes on to set up a surveillance system. And, I mean, you can't go out here anywhere and not see a surveillance system in places and on the road. and, of course, harassing the citizens. I mean, have you ever known a representative by the name of Hansen? That was, I think, back in the 60s. They put him in jail because he was trying to come out here and do what Kennedy should have done, explain the system and the corruption that's going on with the IRS, because the IRS is not part of the federal government either. And, of course, they arbitrarily detain people and release people, you know, stop them. And now they're attempting to do it to everyone because they can't sit here and figure out if you're an illegal alien or not because of what you look like or what car you drive or whatever. And they target key individuals. Now, I've got a list of five different individuals, and I think those individuals that do not know common law, do not know where their rights come from, are the ones that are going to be put in jail at some point, because I think people like myself, they're just going to leave alone. They don't want to put me in jail where I educate all the people that are there, because once they get out, you know, all hell will break loose, so to speak. And, of course, they control the press. As you can go to my media page, and it's very explicit of what's going on. And, you know, they treat all of us as being traitors if we question what the government does. They've even got some laws on the books that says that. And, of course, they suspended the rule of law back in the 1830s or so. They actually replaced the common law in state governments and in the cities and made them all municipal corporations operating under codes. And of course, how can anybody out here be a citizen of a corporation? The United States is defined as a federal corporation. How in the heck can you be a citizen? Because a corporation only has two entities. You either have owners or employees, and that's it. And we're all classified as employees of that federal corporation, and that's how they treat us. And they fire us anytime they want to. They come out here, push in jail, or do whatever they want to. And that's going to continue until we take back and restore the lawful states by putting people that are educated on common law, which is very simple. Common law is just the Constitution. And you can't damage me, and that's it. You know, it's almost the same thing you learn going to Bible school, you know?
Well, you know, the questions are obviously popping up. We need to move out from underneath the corporation of the United States of America Corporation. And we have any ideas on this? Well, I want to save that till after the break. But we've got about 3 minutes left, and I did want to invite my co-host, Kate, if you are unmuted, if you have any questions that we could, you know, answer within this three-minute period before our break.
Good evening, and this has just been really fascinating. And I would say the questions really have to do with what do we do next? Basically, because I am looking at the chat, there is definitely an awareness here, and you are speaking to a really alert audience, and more examples, I think, of your cases. So basically, I don't think we can deal with that right before, but Terry, thanks for that opportunity just to throw those couple of things out.
Well, the very first thing we've got to do is we've got to get the people to be able to communicate with each other within each state so that they can start meeting and uniting and assembling and then trying to advertise that in the rest of the counties, maybe one county next to them and so on and so forth. So at some point down the road, they are all united, at least, you know, three or four from each county even. Because it doesn't need money. It's just like the Revolutionary War. There was only like 3 or 8% of the population that even wanted to go to war. So, you know, all we need is some people that love freedom, you know. Because this is the only way that we've determined that we can get back our power and standing in any way, shape, or form. You know, I can protect myself and my family for the rest of my life. But all the rest of these people are all going broke out here. So is our 3 minutes up?
We should be just about up against that break right now, and so let's just go ahead and do that. Let's take about a three-minute break here, and we will be right back with Walls in Our Minds and our guest, Stephen Patterson. Dr. Kate, sorry about that. My regular co-host is, I believe, listening to us and may be able to chime in here in a little while, Red Beckman. Our guest tonight, our very special guest, is Stephen Pattison, a person who has been doing legal research for the last 23 years and is helping us to understand how we got into the problem that we seem to be in with this de facto government. And we're hoping that in this next hour, we're going to be able to talk more about solutions rather than defining the problem. Stephen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Have you thought about where you want to go with this discussion?
Yeah, I just have a couple other things here, and then I'm going to go to the document. If everybody goes to my website and goes to the You Be the Judge and Jury and skip all the way down to the bottom, and go to the scheme and the system, I have a document in there that's the first paragraph of our constructive notice that anybody can read and ask me questions about. And I'd like to go back to a couple things where on my web pages you can get to the invisible government from the front page or go through the media page, which you just got to go through the media page from the top down. I went through that a couple of days ago, just reviewing to make sure that all the links were alive. And it's just amazing. I put in links where there are search engines so that it goes to a new search every time you click on it, and to see what everybody else has added to that subject that I was searching on. And it's just amazing how many people over the last 10, 15 years have added things that I've started talking about a long time ago. Now, this invisible government was actually created by Executive Order 11647, and that's very interesting reading. All it did is put another 10 states over top of the 48 states here in the United States, and that was done in 1972. So every so often they have to put new constitutions in so that they can continue to control us by using the international law, so to speak. And basically, if you go to that website now that I'm going to go read a few things on, is the scheme. You go down to one of the documents in there is from Dan Metter. That whole document needs to be written because he talks about the endgame alternatives and so forth, and I kind of helped him do that at some point, and I've added some things onto that. But if you go down to the one that is, well, here's another one that pops out at me, which is Agents of Foreign Government, which is the government de facto that Dan Metter was talking about. It has no lawful authority. So if you know how to do it and don't use their laws against them, but yet common law and your natural rights as one of the people inhabiting a lawful state, everything they take is de facto, and you can defeat them in any court. And we've learned that. And, of course, another little key thing. Has anybody out there heard of Samuel J. Tilden? He was one of the presidents back in 1876 that was never installed as the president. He was actually the lawful 19th
president. Stephen, are you on a wireless phone?
No, yes. Not a wireless. It's
You're starting to sound a little Skypey, what we call Skypey, which means you're kind of coming in and out, and okay. I'm not able to understand you quite as clearly as I did before. So
I'm going to change phones then.
What website are you wanting people to go to?
I want you to go to you be the judge and jury. Down at the bottom of that, you'll find the one that talks about the system and the conspiracy. I'm going to change the phone so I get a new battery.
Okay.
How's that sound better?
That's a lot better.
Okay. I was just running out of battery, I guess.
Perhaps. Tell us that website again, because you were breaking up when you were giving it that last time as well. Is it on your website? Is it something we can access from your website?
It's the very first one. If you be the judge and jury, you load that one and go all the way to the end, you'll get one that's called The Scheme and the System.
Let's be sure everybody's got this. I've actually posted your website in the chat room a couple of times. Let's see if I can there it goes. Okay, there I put your website, the Citizens for a Constitutional Republic .com/Pattison_articles.html on the website. So if you go to that website, then you can hit You Be the Judge and Jury right under Pattison Articles and get to where Stephen's talking about.
Go ahead, Stephen. The way to the end, and there's a link there that will take you to the scheme and the system. I have a lot of Dan Metter's information on there. He wrote an article about another United States of America. And, you know, there are several United States, and there's also several United States of Americans that were created. And it's just amazing, all this information. And there's an oath to the foreign government that he talks about, because they have they take the regular oath, like you would think in the lawful federal government, and then they take a loyalty oath to it, too. And he talks about sedition and treason in some of this information, which is basically, as far as we're concerned, they're all under sedition, And once they are notified of their seditious acts, they've got only like 30 days to comply with the wishes of the people of the lawful state government, because you can't do it from their government because it's de facto. It's not the lawful state government. So you got to have identify yourself and who you are and where your power comes from, and you do a constructive notice to them, which I have down here. It's quite a ways down. Yeah, okay, a constructive notice is about, oh, probably two clicks from the end. And it basically says the United States of America, the first 13 de jure states united, is a Republican form of government. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States, or for, I should have had for the United States in there, but de jure, the first lawful government with a Presbyterian type of representative, thus constituting a democratic commonwealth, not a democracy. I've got information in Congress where they said that the republic was replaced with a democracy. Well, they didn't have the authority to do that in the first place. And all power is invested in and derived from the people. I got plenty of court cases that say that. And that's something that anybody can read. It's simple, straightforward. And, you know, we would like to be helpful in any of these documents that are would be filed at any point, that we can give you a sample, and we really wouldn't want anybody to change it unless they could come up with some reason and contact us, because we got to unite. It's like all the constitutions of the first 13 colonies were almost identical. So they all got together and helped one another, and, of course, most of them all knew law back at that, and common law. And this is the kind of, type of constructive notice. And Terry, I've sent you the one on Glenn Hughes. It's I think 47 pages long, and pretty well covers everything. And that's why the judge didn't want to do anything with this, because he knew if somebody put something like that together, that he knew that he was dealing with somebody with knowledge. And we knew where our standing came from. We knew where our power came from, and we established it with this. Our problem is the system has enslaved all the rest of the people out here, and we need to educate a few of them so that we can have at least a few numbers in each state so that we can accomplish this task that I've coined as unite and assemble. And hopefully
Stephen,
I got
you,
the other...
Stephen, are you... Can, before we go to that, can we take a question from a caller?
Sure. You can interrupt me anytime for questions. I love them.
Area code 337. You have an open mic.
Hello, 337.
Well, they had their hand up and had an open mic, but I'm not hearing anything out of them, so.
Now let's go to the next one.
I think that's the only one that had their hand up. So,
okay.
I'm sorry. I interfered with your train of thought there.
There's no problem with that. You know, if anybody would read any of those things, like Section 4 of Article 4, it says the United States shall guarantee to every state in the union a Republican form of government. They're not doing that. It should be obvious to anybody out there that's even read the Constitution a couple of times. And, of course, I think that one of the very first thing that all these groups should do is read their state constitution several times and then read their second to see that there is a difference. The people are not identified in that second constitution. I'll guarantee it. We haven't researched all of them, but the ones we've looked at, they've all done that. And I guess maybe one that would be different would be Texas, because they were a sovereign state even prior to that time. And they were a country that came in with us at some point down the road. And all the madness that's going on today would be stopped if we had the lawful state governments restored so that the people actually participated. Because right now, I think everyone out there should stop voting. Don't vote this week or whenever it's supposed to happen, or next week, and shouldn't vote this fall, and you should start telling everybody else that you're wasting your vote, and go show them the movie, HBO special documentary called Hacking the Democracy. It shows you they do not count your votes. That's how the system works for them to put their people into office or people that they can control one way or another. And I guess at this point we haven't got any other questions. I'd like to go on to my last subject that I'd like to present tonight.
Well, I can't. I'm afraid I can't just drop what you just said. I've got.
Okay, go ahead.
I got to talk about that for a minute because, let me give you an example. Here in Colorado, the Tea Party groups and the 912 groups have really gotten organized, and what they've done is that they put up some GOP candidates that are conservatives that they have really gotten behind. And these are people who the front organization of the GOP don't want in there at all, because
okay,
these are people who understand state sovereignty. They don't owe anything to the GOP. They're not insiders. They're not loyal to party at all. But these people can and will make a difference if they can get elected. If we can avoid having the vote manipulated and really bring the vote out of the people who are no longer buying into the lies. These are people who are, and you should see what is happening here. I mean, we got Chicago politics coming out the kazoo fighting against the people who are leading in their own party, who went to the state assembly and got the highest vote of delegates, and the party themselves are trying to undermine their candidacy because they don't want to see them get in. And what we need right now in Colorado is for all of those people who have stopped believing the lies to go vote for statesmen. And you're now saying they shouldn't go vote. Well, I gotta tell you, I can't take that advice right now because I'm committed to putting people who are not, have no party loyalty, that don't owe anything to anybody because of any backroom deals. We need those people in office. And how are we going to get them in office if we don't go vote for them?
Well, you know what? I don't see a problem with that because most likely a majority of them will not get into office, and you ought to have an alternative plan, which at an alternative plan should be unite and assemble and restore the state, lawful state governments at that point. I don't care when you do it. In other words, you got to be proven that going out, wasting your time, electing someone that gets taken into office, goes into Washington, D.C., and I have an insider that actually worked for Clinton, says, you know what they do with all these people that come in that think they're going to do something or whatever. They're junior statesmen, and they're invited to a party, and they get drugged and hauled off and pictures taken. And that's how they have manipulated people since clear back to Aaron Burr, because Alexander Hamilton bought votes in the Congress to make sure that Thomas Jefferson was voted in as president and Aaron Burr was vice president, because he thought that he couldn't manipulate Aaron Burr, because Aaron Burr was probably the smartest person that I know of back in as the founding fathers. And he spoke 8 languages and was really, really smart. And he's actually the person that killed Alexander Hamilton, which is I've identified as being one of the very first change agents in our government. Now, this system controls everything. I don't care if you had 90% of your people that you voted in, all knowing what I know. They still cannot change the government de facto from within. You first have to restore the lawful state governments to actually put that corporation or that business or that government back into power before we get our rights back, because all the rights we have today are given to us through the 14th Amendment. And they take them away just as fast as they give them to us. And, of course, they print all the money, so they control just about everything there is in this world. And I don't know of any other way. Like I told you earlier, if the IRS folded up tomorrow, it wouldn't change a thing in the system. If all you get all the votes in the world and put somebody in place in there, and let's say there's 51 of them as senators, it won't make any difference. You remember how the Federal Reserve went into power, was passed in December of, 1913, and there was only three people there, supposedly. And that was done unlawful, unconstitutional. You got to have a quorum. You got to have those people all signed in that they were there before you could have a voice vote. So everything they do is unconstitutional. And it won't make any difference who's there. And this one guy from Minnesota not too many years ago, he went in for one term and he just learned too much. And he got killed in a airplane accident, which is one of the famous ways for them to get away, to do away with people they don't like. So, you know, I just as soon sit here at home, restore our lawful state governments, and build from the bottom up. Because if we don't have people out here that know what I know and what I'm trying to explain to everybody on the phone tonight, it ain't going to succeed. But if you guys want to go continue to vote, I'm not going to stop you because, you know, I'm not an elected person. I don't have authority over you. I'm just one of the people just like you guys. I'm voicing my opinion that the sooner we do it, the better off we're going to be. But I think that, sure, if we can get some of the people that are already not voting, because there's a huge amount of them, all united and assembled and bring all these Tea Party people in after they don't succeed this fall, because I'm pretty sure that that's what's going to happen, and get them involved in restoring the lawful states, and then we can make something happen. Because, you know, if you just have one sovereign in a state, and he's got power, and he declares himself governor of that lawful state, he still doesn't have enough people. You understand what I'm trying to tell you, Terry?
We do have a live mic on a caller wanting to ask a question about the voting issue.
Hello, am I on live now?
Yes, you are.
You are live, Mike. We hear you.
Okay. Hi, this is TJ, and actually I didn't have a question. I wanted to comment in about this issue of voting, and I myself, I don't vote anymore, and I revoked my voter registration after a couple years ago through research discovering about this two citizenship issue that there is the people, and then there is this second-class citizen, the federal citizenry, and realizing that, you know, I'm not one of the federal citizens. I am one of the people, and they have changed the laws and made it only to where the federal citizens, the second-class citizens, only they can vote because it's the lower-class citizen of the United States. It's a requirement to be that in order to vote. And if you check the voter registration, you check their laws and everything, and you'll see this. And I found Stephen online, I think it was probably about a year ago, after I've been doing all this research and finding him and some of the constructive notices that he's written. And we've come to a lot of the same conclusions and the same research, and I'm still brand new in all this, just 2 years, and he's been doing this for so long. And I just come to the conclusion myself is that the problem or the resolution to the problem is not going to be that we vote somebody else in. It's the sleeping giant that doesn't know who they are, and it's the people that has to be woken up to realize that they have the power, and there's not going to be any superstar, there's not going to be a hero that's going to go into the state government or the county government or the federal government and rescue us. It is us. We have to rescue ourselves, and as Stephen says, is that we have to restore the proper government, because without the proper government, and he's the one that introduced this to me, without the proper government, we might as well forget everything else.
Thank you, TJ. I appreciate much of what you said there. There's no question that we are the ones that are going to be ultimately responsible. And it really comes back down to why don't the citizens' grand juries that have assembled in, within the states have any authority or power of enforcement today? I mean, you know, getting to know your sheriff is important. The sheriff's got the highest power, but if you don't have a well-regulated state militia system, how can you enforce the First Amendment? The Second Amendment is necessary to enforce the First Amendment. And just getting 12 people together, we've done that. We've put grand juries together. We put out presentments, and they're all being completely and totally ignored. If you've got somebody that, or a number of people that you put into office that are sympathetic to the citizens' rights and their standing, it's going to go a long ways towards trying to get some of these things restored, like our grand jury system, like judicial reform. You know, if you look at, I'm here to tell you, everybody needs to get a hold of the book called The Illusion of Freedom by Martin Babbitts. That book is incredible. His solution is threefold. He says resolution, nullification, and secession. And I don't think that secession necessarily goes all the way to saying that you're severing yourself from the rest of the states. I believe that it boils down to saying really about state sovereignty and taking a stand at the state level to tell the feds to take a flying leap whenever they get outside the Constitution, which they're way outside of that right now, obviously. I mean, they're tenfold outside of it already. And we only have the power of our state. Now, how do we get that restored? Now, this uniting and assembling plan that Steve's talking about is a very powerful concept, because we absolutely can only organize and have a well-regulated state militia if it is organized from the grassroots up. Now, I don't care what you call it. You can call it Citizens Homeland Security like Edwin Vieira does. You can call it unite and assemble like Stephen's calling it. What it really boils down to is a grassroots organization where you've got a sufficient number of people that you can enforce things. You can enforce your presentments. You can enforce your local county that they shouldn't participate with all of these meetings of all these corporations. You can begin to take control of your precinct and possibly even restore your state government to a de jure government, but you've got to start with a grassroots plan. I don't care what you call it. You can call it a militia, homeland security, you know, citizens homeland or a group, committees of safety, whatever you want to call it. You've got to get organized at the grassroots level, and you've got to get people educated, and that's the only way to do it. If you expect any top-down organization like the trust plan or the Restore America plan, or any of those top-down groups like that, if you think that they're going to come in and they're going to provide you with the means of enforcement, I think you are in a pipe dream. You are absolutely delusional if you believe that. So you've got to start somewhere, and having people in office that understand what you're about is not going to hurt that whole system. I mean, how else are we going to get judicial reform and get any kind of standing in a have a common law situation where you can have a common law grand jury, or actually have a jury that is open to the public where you can take these criminal acts to them or take evidence to them and have them go out and enforce it. If we don't get behind putting the right people in as sheriff in our county, we're going to end up going to jail. But if we've got a sheriff in there that understands our Second Amendment rights and wants the people to be armed because he wants to secure his county, then, you know, you got to vote for that guy. You don't get a guy into the sheriff's office without going and voting for him. And you need to make dang certain that the sheriff in your county is somebody that understands individual, the rights of the people on the land. If he doesn't understand that, if he doesn't understand the Constitution and the fact that we do not have constitutional rights, I was talking at a Tea Party meeting in an outlying county here Saturday before last, and I'm sitting there talking to the guy that's the front runner for the sheriff position in that county before I got up on the stage. And I got up on the stage, and one of the things I asked him was, who here believes you have constitutional rights? Well, guess who raised their hand? That guy that was the sheriff that everybody there, that all the Tea Party people thought was the guy that they needed as sheriff. Well, now, he is a good guy. I mean, and he cares about the people, and you know, he's kind of got, he's just a little young, he's a little immature. I mean, he hadn't been through the mill yet, so there's a lot of things that he's still living in the box on. He still grew up in a government school. He still went to a 501c3 church. So he's still got these conditions. So he's raising his hand, and I said, okay, everybody's got your hands raised, can lower them now, because I want you to understand that you do not have any constitutional rights. I don't have any constitutional rights, and I don't want any constitutional rights. And I looked over at him, and his eyes were as big as silver dollars. Guess what? He heard me, and he came over and talked to me after that talk, and he wanted to know more, and he wants me to come and meet with him. Well, we got to get people like that are willing to listen to the people in the office. If we want to restore this de jure, how are we going to do that if we don't at least have somebody out there in a position of authority who is willing to take a stand against this old guard establishment that we've got? You call them whatever you want, the international bank lords, the Ashkenazi Jews, or you know the Khazars, or you know, you call them whatever you want. They control the money, and the power controls all the way down into our county courts. And we got to figure out a way to fight that. Now, Dr. Kate came out with a saying a year ago, and I believe this is absolutely the truth. And that is that we're only going to take them down by 1,000 cuts. It's going to take not just one thing. We're going to have to break this cycle in a lot of places. So I totally agree with what Stephen's talking about here. We've got to be able to defeat the jurisdiction of these admiralty courts. We've got to be able to assemble on a local basis. We've got to work it from the grassroots. But why is it that we have to give up our rights in order to gain our rights? Why is it that we have to play in the corporate game of saying, okay, I have to get rid of my driver's license. I have to get rid of my voter registration card. I have to give up all of these things that really give me any source of standing in the community, and in order to get my rights as a natural born citizen or a sovereign citizen of the state. I've been talking to, and I know I'm on a soapbox here, but I want you to hear me out, because I'm wanting Steve and others to respond to what I'm saying, because I'm talking to a constitutional and criminal attorney that's going out there and doing sovereignty lectures here in the state of Colorado. He may be listening, and I hope he is. I texted him, and I wanted him on this show. I really wanted him to call in and give us some feedback. But he had a concept that I totally agree with, and that is there aren't any silver bullets. We're not going to be able to just do one thing that might work today in a court and expect it to work tomorrow in a court, because they're going to figure out a way to jack us one way or the other. But he's saying we should be able to express our rights as a sovereign citizen without giving up anything else. And why can't we do that? If we're assembling and if we put people together on a grassroots level, and we get a few people in positions like the sheriffs and positions like that, and start getting some of these judges that have been appointed, get their butts kicked out, and get some people in a place where at least they're going to protect us in our local community. And we've got enough voting block assembled. And what else is a militia if it's not a wonderful voting block? I mean, we've got to take our power back. We've got to restore our grand jury system, just like Red says. But we've got to do what Stephen's talking about doing, too. We've got to do it with 1,000 cuts. There's not going to be one magical solution. All right, I'll shut up and let Stephen respond to me. I mean, tell me I'm crazy. Tell me I'm off in left field someplace.
Well, you're not out in left field, but I guess, are you saying that we have constitutional rights or that we don't have constitutional rights?
We do not have constitutional rights. We as sovereign state citizens are under natural law. Our Creator gave us our rights, and that's where we got to take a stand. But we got to take that stand in our local community, and we've got to assemble, and we've got to educate our local people.
But underneath the system that we have now, we do have constitutional rights. They're given to you through the 14th Amendment. That's the only rights you have. That's why I'm telling people they shouldn't waste their time voting. And, of course, you know, if you want to try it one more time and if it doesn't work this year, we, you know, go ahead and continue to restore the state governments, because you can't have a grand jury in a state unless you have the lawful state government actually restored. And the sheriff that's in there now, once you have the lawful state government restored, you can go to him, give him a constructive notice, give him the choice as well, you know, until we are able to organize and get an election starting this fall or whenever, we would like you to serve as the county law, common law sheriff. And he can do that just like I can continue to sit here and have a driver's license, a social security number, a bank account, whatever. I can still be a sovereign citizen because there's court cases that says you can be one or the other. And you are the one that decides who you are. If you want to be free, you've got to be a sovereign free man. A free man means includes women and children. And, of course, knowing these things, you know, because, you know, the only thing the lawful Constitution does is it secures the rights that we already have. And they're so numerous that, you know, we couldn't even list them all, because even all the ones that are decorated rights underneath the state constitutions are not all the rights you've got in the world. And one of the things that the people out there listening, maybe there's a few attorneys, or Terry, your friend, may be writing in, they need to read the preface and the introduction to Stephen's book, which is a free download off the Internet. I mean, the first paragraph that's written by a person, let's see, where's that, Samuel Taylor. He is the professor of the Columbia University, which is in Washington, D.C., and he wrote in the introduction saying that through the civil law and the common law have much in common, yet in many important particulars they are the opposite of each other. In the course of his studies, because this is addressed to the professor or to the students of law going to college there, said that in the course of his studies, the student of law finds so much said in an incidental way about the civil law that is calculated to mislead his judgment in regards to the true character of that scheme of justice, because it is a scheme. That is, that's something I added, sorry. That is important at the onset of his walks over the fields of common law to give him some account of the civil law and to point out in what it differs essentially from the common law. This is a matter of much importance to every student who aspires to be comprehensive and enlightened knowledge of jurisprudence. Now, that really says it all when they're sitting there telling you that the attorneys, since day one, have been misled. And they've been misled because civil codes are only for subjects and for employees. It's Roman civil law, and that's very well explained in that introductory. And, of course, there's many other learned people back in the Founding Fathers' days. Chancellor Kent said the same thing about this book, being the best book he'd ever read. And there's a few other things that I'm going to be publishing in emails down the road for people that do reply to my first contact and second contact emails that I've sent out. But basically, if you have an attorney friend, you need to make a copy of this in both the preface and the introduction is both posted on my web pages. You might have to email me to get the preface because I don't have it connected to any other web pages yet, and I haven't got it posted on my front web page because I'm still working on that research to pin down the court case that a Supreme Court judge said that they didn't have the authority to replace common law in the states with civil codes. It's a non-constitutional act because we adopted common law as the law of the land. The constitutions are common law documents. They interacted and created the states from the grant from the people. And those constitutions says that it's the supreme law of the land, but it includes the law. Before that, it says the law and the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, meaning that all those things combined. And back when the Constitution was written, there was only one law, common law. Civil codes came around in the 1820s. And that was all the doing, again, of the Rothschild family. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah. We've got a caller, Stephen, but before I give Frank the floor, my good friend Frank Williams is online with us. I don't know if you know Frank, Stephen, or Frank knows you, but you guys will get to know each other for sure as we go forward. Stephen, I have a question related to the 14th Amendment. It's my firm belief that that the 14th Amendment, along with the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th, none of those four amendments have been lawfully ratified. The 14th was a fraudulent ratification, actually done under gunpoint, and it wasn't even though they were under gunpoint, it still wasn't. Even if you counted the ones that were ratified under gunpoint, it still wasn't ratified. I believe the case of Dyett versus Turner proves that. Now, given that fact, why are people going out here and filing all these papers refuting their 14th Amendment citizenship when we've got an amendment that we should be nullifying? We should say it's not ratified, it's not a part of our Constitution. We need to go back and clean up the mess that's been created here. I mean, it's just like Obama. He's not my president. He's not president at all. I mean, I need a natural born citizen as a president. So as far as I'm concerned, everything that he's doing right now is unlawful. It's a traitorous treason act. Everything that they're doing, that the Congress is doing, that they have him sign this stuff. As far as I'm concerned, it's not law. As far as I'm concerned, the 14th Amendment is not law. Why aren't we going after these things in a way and telling the truth to the people about it instead of hiding and filing some documentation that says, well, I'm refuting my 14th Amendment citizenship? I mean, explain that to me. I don't get it.
Okay. Well, our self-serving declaration doesn't say that we're refuting anything that they've created, because we ignore them, because it's like the if you go to my front page and you go down to the fifth web page, it says the non-ratification of the 14th Amendment by Utah Supreme Court Justice Ellett. All the documentation you ever want to know is published right there about the 14th Amendment not being lawfully or constitutionally placed in as an amendment. And, of course, you got to understand that all the states were made territorial states. Therefore, all the people in those territories have no power, no rights, they don't even have the right to vote. It's just a scam that they're playing on everybody. They do what they want to because they control everything in Washington, D.C. If you go to your distant relative, Norman Dodd, he says you've got a country or a government of bankers and lawyers, or attorneys, I think he used. And that's what we have today. They do what they want to do because they've changed the character and status of all the states to being territories under the subject of Congress. And they put in all their people into that Congress because there's no one out here lawfully able to vote. That's why they don't count the votes. Even you voting in their de facto government doesn't really do anything because they put anybody they want to. They showed that by putting a president in that allegedly wasn't even born in the United States. I mean, how far do we have to go? I mean, and you can't.
Stephen, you seem to be breaking up to me. I keep asking people in the chat room, and also in my production room. I keep asking if they're hearing you break up and they're not responding to me, but I'm not understanding about half.
Hang on, I got another phone to change to.
Good. While you're doing that, I'm gonna let Frank Williams speak. We got about 15 minutes to go on the show, and I want Frank to be able to get his question in.
Okay,
Frank,
go ahead.
You got the floor.
Hi, Terry. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Frank.
I just got my homework. I got three-fourths through reading it tonight, and I decided to go ahead and call in before I finish reading the prerequisites. But I couldn't help but reply when I heard the discussion about the constitutional rights. I think we're arguing semantics. I realize that in our lazy language habits today and in our public education that we most of us have had, at one point in time we thought that a constitutional right was a right that was given to us by the Constitution. However, in the last 20 years, I have learned on a number of occasions that the term constitutional right describes rights which were protected by the Constitution, rights that were given to us by God as natural human beings.
I don't disagree with you. That's the way it should be. But what I'm saying is that currently, as citizens of the United States subject to the Congress, we have constitutional rights given to us through the 14th Amendment, and that's the only place we have rights. In other words, we're both people. We're sovereign, and we have our unalienable rights that are guaranteed by the lawful Constitution, but that lawful Constitution is being used by other people other than our representatives because they have changed our character and status and no longer count our votes. And therefore, the 14th Amendment is placed in there, and those rights that all the people have that are calling themselves citizens of the United States come from that 14th Amendment. So therefore, it is their constitutional rights that they give to us. It's not the lawful Constitution, because the people behind that Constitution is not the people within the borders.
Okay. I agree. I agree with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you understand that, Terry?
I'm having trouble hearing you. And apparently the people in the chat say they're hearing you fine, so it must be my Skype connection that I'm having trouble hearing. So I didn't get all of that, honestly.
Well, I'll call you tomorrow.
Yes.
And we'll discuss it again. But basically
even Frank was coming in and out on what I'm hearing. So you guys just keep talking. Maybe Kate should step in here and try to host to the end of the show, because I'm not hearing clearly.
Well, Kate, are you there?
I'm here.
Yes, I am here. So please go ahead. And Terry, I can hear as well. I can hear pretty well. So please go ahead.
Okay. Well, do you have any questions of what I've said so far?
Actually, I've been taking notes, and right now I probably will have some questions, but I will take a look in the chat room and see if we've got any other questions out there. Let me see. Anyone got a question out there? Terry, you can see the chat, yes?
Yes, can you hear me, Kate?
Yes, I can hear you. You can hear me, right?
Yeah, but you're breaking up. Everybody's breaking up on me a little bit, so I don't need to talk about that anymore. Just handle things.
Okay, very good. No, just please,
Terry,
keep talking. Yeah.
Terry, we can hear you fine. It's just that you can't hear us very well. So if you wanted to speak at any time, okay? Basically, one of the things that my research just blew my mind is that Thomas Jefferson knew what was going to happen to us at some point because of what he wrote. He said, when the American people ever allow the banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers occupied. It just blew me away when 2 or 3 million people have lost their homes. All this madness has to stop. And the only, and I'm able to fight them on a one-to-one basis, but we need to save the whole country before it goes to heck of a handbasket, because, and the only way to do that is through our lawful state governments, where we would have standing and the power to do the things that I'm talking about, including making our own state banks, which there's a woman out of North Dakota that knows quite a bit about that, and I'm almost versed on that because it isn't really hard to print a piece of paper and say it's worth something, as long as you can get the state government to stand behind it. And that's all the colonies did back in those earlier days when they didn't have gold sitting around backing their money. So there's nothing wrong with that because, you know, it's just like bartering. It doesn't make any difference. You just got to have a value placed on it, like collectively all the property that we currently still manufacture here in the United States. If we can figure out what that annual value of something created, that could be the basis of the value of the state note that we would get printed and used for transactions between the people in the states. But, I mean, at some point, if we don't get manufacturing plants back in our country and creating wealth here, we're going to be a debtor nation, which we already are in their system, but we're still the most wealthiest country in the world just because of the people here thinking they're free, but they're not. And I think at some point down the road, everyone's going to learn the truth, and the truth will set us free. And, of course, Terry is great. And everybody ought to go to my other webpage, which is if you do I_want_my_country_back!!! you'll get to I Want My Country Back, which is also on the left-hand top corner of my main page. It's just unbelievable, the inflation, because in the 1900s, 90% of the population was self-employed. We had no central banks in America since 1832, no income tax on the citizens. We had gold and silver was the only lawful coin. Government services were paid by excise taxes, which are a legal federal tax. And it just goes on and on. And these people that are doing it to us, are just currently seven families that are hiding amongst in the world because nobody knows who they are for sure. You've got a few names like the Rothschilds, but they are well protected, and because they got all the money, they can buy all the protection in the world. But they put their pants on just like we do. And if we do this from the grassroots up, and take back a county at a time, get enough counties to restore the state governments, lawful state governments, I don't think this is, it's rocket science, you know? It's so easy, it's just unbelievable as far as I'm concerned. Because all the paperwork's already been done. The Constitution's already there. All you got to do is say, hey, I'm one of the people, I want to vote. And we sit down and vote somebody in as governor. And the rest of the needful people of that lawful state, and get them to do their jobs, and within a short period of time, we can notify the de facto government that they're no longer needed. And at that point, depending on what they do, either sedition will be charged on them or treason, because all the actions that they're doing right now are seditious, and they're operating under sedition. And until they're notified and someone else can do their job, there's nothing we can do about it. So that's why I came up with this solution, and I think there's some other people out there that have that same solution. I've read a few other people talk about it, but nobody's taken the effort to unite and assemble. And the very first thing you need to do is go find the very first constitution in your state. Like California's got one that is just unbelievable, and then you read the current one, you can see the difference of this. You are not being represented in that the government that's there now. They're all de facto, and that's explained on my main webpage. Is there any more questions at this point?
This is Red Backman. Do you all hear me?
I hear you, Red. Go ahead.
Yes, Red. Welcome, Red.
I've been listening since the beginning, and I think that... Everybody should immediately after this program is over, I think they should pick up their Bible and read Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter. And you'll see where, spiritual values are necessary to having an orderly society. I've listened now for almost 2 hours, and no one has mentioned the spiritual situation, and I think that's the most important thing for us to be considering. It's going to be repent or perish. That's where we're headed. Because these scoundrels, the families that Dr. Kate is talking about, they want us all destroyed. They want the population. We want this world. They want this planet depopulated down to a very low level. And they have these kind of schemes, and that's where they're heading. And they will get there, perhaps, if we don't have a spiritual awakening. And if everybody will read Deuteronomy 28. It's the chapter about blessings and curses. And it was Moses himself that wrote this, and he said, as long as you serve the true God, you are going to prosper. You are not going to have a problem with the enemy. The enemy, you're going to be too strong, and you're going to have your God will protect you. And so I think that's... anybody that's looking ahead any distance at all, you see, that's one of our biggest problems. Very few people are looking ahead. They can look ahead to the next paycheck and try to figure out how they're going to make it cover all the bills and all, but as far as looking into the future, the future that our children and our children's children are going to inherit, there's very few people that have that capacity. And it's going to get very costly. It's going to get very, very, very costly for us. And so education, we've got to get people to understand, that we're just absolutely inundated in that which is false, that which is not true. And there's one thing about all these assumed contracts and such that these politicians and such have saddled us with. And I've had to contend with a number of those in my lifetime, and I hear the demands and such, and then I say, well, now, you tell me there's a contract, but where is the full disclosure? It's not there. We aren't smart enough to demand full disclosure on all of this political garbage that is being used against us. And that, of course, is just one of the things that we need to be... demanding is that we have full disclosure on all of this. We need more full disclosure on this health plan that they're coming up with. It's been a jolt here the last few days with people. Their gold coins are going to be taxed and this type of thing. Nobody recognized and seen what was there. I see our time is about out, so I'll turn it back to you, Dr. Kate. Good to hear you and your voice, so... Until next week, I'll be hoping and praying for something better that can come along.
Thank you, Red. And Terry, would you like to close with a prayer?
Thank you, everyone. I praise God for all the folks, the good folks here at Falls in Our Pines, and I pray that healing hand be on all of you and that we can see the truth.
Amen.
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 Amen.